the county farm, another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on. Get that set.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now, here's your host, Roach Brown.
Florida, yes.
All right, then.
Hey, Roach, you're on.
Let me see. So, we'll be on for about an hour.
I saw that. That's wonderful.
Hey, Roach,
we're giving you the whole hour.
You're
later,
on right now.
Up the phones and let folks call in with questions or comments. But we want to start off talking about what the conference was about.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. I got a lot of notes from the conference right here by my side. So when I tell you I'm ready, I am ready.
Yeah.
You know, Sharon, I miss Ambroach. I missed the prayer.
Everybody's on
rally
right now.
The next day, were either one of y'all there?
No.
I didn't do the rally either. My chief operations officer who stayed behind did the rally, the walk.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, because that was for 2 days. That was a lot to take out for 2 days out of your schedule.
It really was. But I did get a chance to speak to Dr. Garrett's wife, yesterday. Well, yeah, Sunday briefly. And it was amazing. She said it was an awesome turnout. But yeah. So,
yeah.
Okay. Everybody's on right now. I play the intro and everything. Hello.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, we're on right now live.
I don't hear it. I don't hear PFW.
Good morning.
That's because we're on right now. I play the intro and everything.
Okay, so we're on?
Yeah.
Good morning. Good. We didn't hear it. Okay, come on, let's go. All right. Good morning. This is Roach Brown coming to you live from Crossroads in Washington, D.C. on WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. WPFW is heard around the world. And I want to thank all of our listeners from around the world who've been calling us, texting us. And it's unbelievable that we've been on the air for 15 years. And in that 15 years, we've managed to build up a tremendous audience base worldwide. I didn't know what smartphones and cell phones, folk are able to listen to our show anywhere in the world. So you can punch up WPFW 89.3 FM and you can get us on your cell phone worldwide. I want to thank all of you for tuning in, and especially for our folk, our friends who calls in every month from Germany, Rick. Boy, I miss you, Rick. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But before we start, as usual, we have an unusual guest, somebody who is inspirational, inspiring, somebody we just met over the weekend, in fact. But we'll get into that. But before we start, we open up at what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Here we go, the grapevine. Hey. What an eclipse lockdown reveals about dignity in prisons and jails. Recent lawsuits regarding the rights of incarcerated people and guards include gender, religious discrimination, and the right to watch the eclipse. Isn't that something?
Okay.
On Monday afternoon, tens of millions of people around the country stopped whatever they were doing to go outside and look to the skies, hopefully while wearing protective eyewear, to get a glimpse of the 2024 solar eclipse. Few of the sky gazers will have to sue for the right. That's the situation of 6 men incarcerated at the state prison in Woodburn, New York, found themselves in after state prison officials announced that facilities in the path of the eclipse, all detention prison facilities, will be on lockdown during the passing of the eclipse. The lawsuit argued that the rare celestial events holds religious significance and that being prevented from viewing it constituted a violation of their religious freedom. After a federal judge initially tossed their claims, late Thursday, attorneys for the men announced a settlement that would give them, though not the rest of the prison, access to outdoors in the yard so they can watch the solar eclipse. They had to sue in order to watch the solar eclipse. Ohio is among 34 states that criminalize people living with HIV. Who gets prosecuted? Cayuga County prosecutes the most people under laws with heightened penalties. There are no national reporting requirements that track arrests or prosecutions under state law that criminalize people living with HIV. Until recently, it wasn't clear how frequently people were arrested or prosecuted under six Ohio laws that criminalize certain acts, including sex or substantially increased the penalties. Some of the laws also apply to people with hepatitis or tuberculosis. Research released by the Ohio Health Modernization Movement and Equity Ohio, two groups pushing for the law to be reformed, identified 214 cases prosecuted in Ohio during the six-year period ended in 2020. In regards to this, even where abortion is legal, people in jail face huge barriers. New reviews of jail policies in 13 states found vague, confusing, or non-existent guidelines and major hurdles to obtaining an abortion while one is incarcerated. Approximately 3% of the women in jail in the United States in 2017 were pregnant at the time of their arrest. With thousands of jails nationwide and no central oversight, astonishingly little is known about people's access to abortion while incarcerated. A new report released Tuesday offered a glimpse at how jails in Illinois provide reproductive care and found that fewer than one-third of the state's jails have written policies on abortion. The policies that do exist are often vague and confusing. It may include steep barriers like requiring a person in jail to make an arrangement for or pay for the procedure themselves, even though they are locked up inside of an institution. And lastly, and this is really, oh, this turns my stomach. The D.C. mayor's bill targets truancy and mandates aggressive prosecution. The district's mayor for public safety and justice said she was okay if the bill meant more youths would be locked behind bars. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser unveiled legislation Wednesday that would require the Office of the Attorney General in D.C. to more aggressively prosecute children and teens who commit certain crimes and take action to resolve all truancy cases. A proposal that would limit prosecutorial discretion as local leaders try to address a crisis among young people in the district. And just let me say that the Deputy Mayor for Public Safety, Ms. Apaya, lady, I'm against this particular stand that you take, that it's okay to lock up black youth. You passed a law 2 weeks ago in Washington, D.C., penalizing and locking up more, aggressively locking up our youth. Now we're talking to them about truancy. Let me say this, young lady. We've been in the street. We work with groups every week. I meet with 3-4 organizations every week, about 20 to 30 representatives, about this juvenile problem of crime and the carjacking. And that once, not once, have anything been in this bill about prevention, intervention, alternative to incarceration. You're talking about locking up our kids. D.C. leads the nation in locking up youth. And our youth get locked up and stay locked up 30, 40, 50 years. I got guys coming to me now who went in at 17, 18, and 19. They're in their 50s and 60s, young lady. And for you to be a black woman and say it's okay to lock up black youth, go down to the juvenile facility and you will see there's 32 inmates there and not one white, all are black. You go to Superior Court in Washington, D.C., the juvenile court, all of the defendants are black and brown, 98%. And you saying you don't have a problem with locking up our kids and there's nothing in none of the bills that you submitted deals with intervention, prevention, or alternatives to incarceration. Please, young lady, I don't know who you are, is and where you come from, But don't lock up our kids, because we're already doing it. You haven't found out that. And I read at the beginning, the mayor talking about this truancy thing. They're going to lock up more aggressively prostitute kids for truancy. Young lady, we found out that a lot of kids are afraid to come out of the house because they're afraid they're in the neighborhood. They don't want to join a gang. Their life is being threatened. There's bullies in the way. There's people on the street selling drugs, shooting and killing. And you got kids who are afraid to come out of the house. And our homeless rate for juveniles is off the chart. Instead of aggressively pursuing truancy, find out why the kids are not going to school. They need services. They don't have a home. A lot of these kids live in the street, under the bridges, sleeping, whatever. You're talking about locking them up again. Come on, sister. Are you a sister? Don't do this to our kids, please. And that's been what we call the crime, the grapevine. Thank you for listening. And this morning, we're going to get to somebody we just met last week, and this lady is a fireball. Boy, she lit the conference up. Joining us is our co-host, Nikechi Taifa, and our guest this morning is a young lady who would light your candle. If you got a cake, don't blow the candles out, because she already didn't blow them out, y'all. Y'all ain't got to worry about lighting the candles on your cake. We got Miss Sharon Driver, from incarceration to entrepreneurship. And before we get to Sharon, Nikechi, you want to say something about the conference, how we met her, and the purpose of that national conference for returning citizens?
Yeah.
It was off the chain. Go ahead, Nikechi.
Oh, my goodness. It really was off the chain, Roach. Oh, my goodness. It was the fourth annual National Returning Citizens Conference in recognition of what we call National Second Chance Month. And it was hosted by the 400 Years of African American History Federal Commission and the National Alliance of Faith and Justice. And there were just multitudes of special presentations, keynotes, main stage workshops, breakout room sessions ranging from faith and education and housing and workforce development, health and family reunification, law, juvenile justice, technology. I mean, it was, and Rose, you was the priest of the resistance at the luncheon, because you gave your very unique Roach Brown style comedy.
it was
really great. And it was great meeting Sharon in the hallway, where I heard when you say, come on, you got to come on my show, because you had just come out of a workshop with her. And you were, I understand, my sister, that you were totally and completely on fire. So I just want to conclude by saying that our dear brother Carlisle Holder, a former warden at Coleman Federal Penitentiary, was the mover and shaker of the convening. And everybody, all the returning citizens that I saw and heard, they respected that man to the highest. Yeah, he was a warden and, you know, the prison system and all like that. But the amount of support and help and assistance and humanity that this individual, Dr. Carlisle Holder, has shown consistency over the years shows why this convening was a total success. And one more thing, your good friends, Fox and Bob, Sybil Fox Richardson, was one of the keynote speakers. And there was a highlight with a film with Kimba, Jones and Jesselyn and Cynthia Roseberry and myself and the like. So it was just great. I'm still on cloud nine. So I'm going to turn it back to you, Roach.
Okay, and I just want to add one thing to it before we get to Sharon. In my more than 50 years of being involved in criminal justice, I've never heard of a warden or ex-warden have a conference for returning citizens.
Amen.
That is historic. That is unusual. It's never been done before. Never heard of it. And we met Carlisle Holder with Walter Ridley. And it seems, Sharon, that we've met, we've been fortunate enough to have some brothers who have been in the executive position of running institutions across the country. These brothers knew what the behind the scenes background about why all of us go to jail. The majority of people are black. And these wardens, Carlisle Holder, Walter Ridley, John Boone, Delbert Jackson, and Ken Hardy, these are some of the new wave. Most of them are gone now. But these men realized that the majority of the people in the prison was us, and they used their position not to suppress or stymie or help or keep us down. They did whatever they could to make sure you got a fair shake to come out of prison. So the Carlisle Holder and the staff at that National Returning Citizens Conference, I take my hat off to you. And if I had any more hair, I would I would brush my hair back in another hairstyle, but I don't have no hair. But I just want to thank you. So now we get to this dynamic young lady named Sharon Driver. I hosted a workshop on housing for returning citizens. And this young lady stood up in that workshop and set it on fire. I mean, she lit it up. When we got finished, I said, lady, you got to come on our radio show. You got to share your story with our audience. So you want to just give us a brief thing of your story of how you got to where you are, what you went through to get to be where you are. And I can't wait for our people to hear what you have to say. Sharon Driver.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone that's on the panel. And what a blessing and honor it is to have been asked to be the guest speaker today. Again, my name is Sharon Driver. I am an amazing mom to three wonderful children. I have seven grandchildren. I reside here in Orlando, Florida. I am married to Clarence Driver, raised up in Mississippi, college graduate of Mississippi Gulf Coast Junior College. Love the laboratory. I am a former incarcerated woman here in the state of Florida. I went to prison for the RICO Act, sentenced to 20 years in Department of Correction, of which I gave back 15 years. Moving forward, being convicted of this crime, once I received that sentence, I never gave up hope, never wavered my faith in God. So I will give all honor, praise, and glory to him for my freedom, first and foremost. Because now with the, you know, unrelenting, unapologetic, and deep passion for what I am the founder and CEO of S&D Enterprises, CDC Incorporated here.
Yeah, what does S&D stands for?
I tell people all the time, everybody think that's my name. That's those initials are my name, but it's not. It's Salvation and Deliverance.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
Yes,
beautiful.
Salvation and Deliverance Enterprises. When God gave me this vision, I always knew that I wanted to have my own enterprises. And writing while I was in prison, I came home and S&D is what I came up with.
And Salvation and Deliverance.
Salvation and Deliverance.
And how long have you been home?
I've been home since 2017.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And what are you doing now?
I run my own reentry program. I run a reentry and transitional housing program here. It is a dignified reentry program that where we provide residents with a sense of hope, rehabilitating the lives of formerly incarcerated men and women to end the cycle of recidivism. Okay. So I have currently 13 homes here in Central Florida.
You have 13 transitional homes for returning citizens in Central Florida.
Yes.
How did you get that many? We had trouble getting one.
Again, glory be to God. Blessings, you know, from above. I have some amazing people here that I work with. My staff is utterly amazing. I must give a shout out to my staff first and foremost before I move forward, because that way you will know how I've been blessed. I have a chief financial officer by the name of Neil Lavelle, who keeps the finances flowing. My chief operations officer, you all met him, Pastor Anthony Lewis, who was
the
conference with me. Yes. I have a chief investment officer, Mac Major, out of Los Angeles, California. My staff here, Gina Del Ponte, she's my administrative director, who I received from Department of Correction when she came home. She came home to S&D. And just over the years, she has played a huge, huge part in this organization and helping me maintain and stay afloat. She does everything from the intake to going back into the prisons, recruiting, you name it. She's absolutely amazing. And she's just like a daughter to me. My daughter, Sharina Gray, who is my office manager, also plays a huge role.
Oh, okay.
Yes. In my organization being where it's at on the level that it's at. So I have a case manager by the name of Michelle Patterson. So we bring a lot of tools to the reentry world here in Central Florida. And I must give shout outs to people who helped me in the very beginning, who are just associates of mine, Tammy Scarborough, who also helped me get S&D up and running.
Let me ask this question. I hosted this workshop Saturday at the conference on housing for returning citizens.
That's correct.
And when you got up and spoke and said that you operate 13 halfway transitional houses, and we here in Washington, D.C. have been fighting tooth and nail with the mayor's office, various funding sources to get housing for. And we realize that housing is a critical need, even though somebody may have a drug problem or a substance abuse problem or whatever, they still need a house. And you can't provide services or treatment to somebody living on the street or sleeping on the street.
Right.
And this housing crisis is multiplied not only all across the country because of the high interest rates and et cetera, but when somebody have a criminal record or they've been involved with the criminal justice system, you find out that it's difficult to get a house. My wife and I, we tried to get an apartment and a house, and I was surprised to see on the application, they asked, do you have a criminal record? We were denied access to rent it. And for you to come out to get 13 houses, and we fighting up here, we had two houses. We just got rid of them a year ago, but what you said about 13 houses, it blew me away because I know how difficult it is, the laws, the red tape, and the jiggy boogie they take you through.
That's right.
And it's a lot, of jiggy boogie that you got to go through.
Let me tell you, it was not easy. Don't let me make minute on this. It was not easy. Trust and believe that I've had the door slammed in my face. I've had the denials. I've been told no. I've been told to give up. I've been told to sit down. I've been told stay in my lane. I've been told it all. But I'm here. Yes, I've been told it all. But I could, you know, anybody that knows Sharon Driver knows that I'm not a quitter, and I do not take no for an answer. So I just continue to press on and press forward. And the opportunity arose one day back in 2021. I happened to be at the right place at the right time, patronizing. A lot of people patronized me during the pandemic because I started selling dinners. Real quick story. In 2019, when I received my 501c3, I quit my job. And not knowing that around the corner was lurking the pandemic. And so I started selling lunches. And one day after, you know, when the pandemic was ending, I was out thanking companies that patronized me all that time to help me stay afloat, and happened to be in Southeast Steel thanking them for patronizing my business. And there was a man at the counter ordering appliances for his rental properties.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hold up, that I thank you, Lord, for me being here, because but that's who I needed to see. And I introduced myself, told him who I was, where I've been, and what my plans are for my future, and gave him my business card. We exchanged numbers, and lo and behold, he started not answering my phone calls after a while. And after about a month and a half, I called him from a different number. And I was like, hey, listen, I know you've been dodging me, you know the number, but I'm that same lady that's asking for an opportunity to rent your properties. And I said, if you give me 5 minutes of your time with 2 minutes already being gone, I promise you I'll make it worth your while. And he was like, okay, you know, sort of thing, because I've been calling since I first met him, you know. But I guess he thought I was just blowing smoke. Well, lo and behold, I went to meet him, had that proposal ready, put it in his hands and my shorts and my flip-flops, you know, and gave me my opportunity. He was like, hey, I will give you. Yes, I told him everything. I told him, I said, hey, I'm a woman coming home from prison with the idea of opening transition houses, being able to help the women that I left behind. You know, I gave him the whole spiel. And I, like I told him, I 5 minutes and 3 minutes, 2 minutes already gone. And by the time I got through talking to him, he was like, ooh, intrigued by this lady, and just handed me the keys. And he's like, okay, this is not the house, but I'm going to show you one that you see if you can work with it. And when I went into that house, I was like, yes, I can work with this. Let me just give me some time. Let me show you what I can do. And I went to work. And that grand opening, he was there. You know, he came and he was like, wow, all these people are here for, you know, this lady that's been in prison. You know, that's what he was saying to himself. He shared with me afterwards. He was like, I did not know that you knew the magnitude of people that you knew.
Yeah.
Like, well, I've been doing my homework, you know, and I'm excited about what I'm doing, you know. And that house led from that one to the second house, to the third. And before you knew it, I had 5 houses within 4 months.
How did you get them furnished?
Oh, wow. Well, I saved my money. I came home working to do what God had given me the vision to do. And so I literally saved my income, working, putting back. And I started going to yard sales, estate sales, and things of that nature, planning, making calls, making connections with vendors for beds and things of that nature. And before you knew it, I had people donating things to me, appointments to pick up furniture here, furniture there. And the things that I have bought over time, I had garages full of stuff.
Hmm.
I was prepared to do what I set out to do.
You know, this is one of the things that we do here on Crossroads. We try to bring guests on who motivate, inspire, and share information. And the name of that show today is From Incarceration to Entrepreneurship. And a lot of men and women come out and they focus on what they don't have, what they can't get, or who's not helping them. You did the same thing we've been talking about. Do the best you can with what you don't have. Don't
That's
stop.
Right.
Keep on going.
That's
and
right.
You didn't have nothing and took that. This is National Second Chance Month.
That's
and lady,
right.
This is your second, third, fourth. We wanted to bring you on to motivate and inspire folks to let them know that you can do whatever you set your mind on.
Let me tell you something. When one door closed, what I learned coming home, and I'm going to go even deeper. When your family rejects you when you come home, yeah. Don't love them no less. You love them even more.
More.
You love them even more because, see, they thinking you're the same person that left here.
And you're not.
And so that motivated me. I've kind of like been rejected from my family because of the mistakes I had made through my life. But nothing could get me to love them any less. And what I learned going to prison is that I put myself there. And taking ownership of your own self, of oneself first, allows you to give yourself forgiveness. Then if you can't do that, you'll never be able to move forward. And so I forgave my family. I forgave, you know, myself. And I thank God that I was sat down, placed where I was, although I knew I didn't deserve to be there for no 20 years. But he just wanted to get my attention. And once he got my attention, everything else fell into place. So when coming out of prison, as long as you stay focused, put God first, and then do what you need to do, everything else will fall into place. And that's exactly how it happened for me. Go ahead.
You did something about that. Will you tell them about what you did?
You're breaking up. No, you're breaking up.
I was saying that you had 20 years, but you weren't going to spend 20 years in prison. What did you do? How did you do it?
Writing my appeal and getting it turned in time, I mean, in the nick of time, was one of the major obstacles that God put on the forefront of my brain when I got there. And I'll never forget that walk from classification, being told that my EOS date, which means my end of sentence date, would be August the 27th of 2029. That was devastating. I couldn't even wrap my mind around being in prison that long. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first thing that God did for me was.
And what did you do? What did you do? When you found out you.
Huh? Yeah, I started writing. When I got that end of sentence date, I immediately had to get all the way down on my face. I had to cry out to God. I had to ask the question, why am I here? Why am I here? I haven't killed anybody. I haven't, I mean, I haven't really did anything that bad. My crime was a white collar crime. It's called racketeering. So 20 years, I don't deserve 20 years here. Yes, I deserve to be punished for the crime that I committed, but 20 years?
Absolutely. And that's what the whole problem is with this mass incarceration, this over-incarceration, this death by incarceration, and it must stop. I mean, I it is just so unfair. It is so unequal. We won't even talk about other people. I'm not even going to get into that. But it does not take 20 years to teach a lesson. If a lesson even has to be taught, we need find different modalities in terms of holding people accountable, as opposed to just locking them up, throwing away the key, and having them throw away their lives. One of the things I heard at the conference in one of the panels I was in was the fact that many women, in particular, because many times they are incarcerated for long periods of time during their prime childbearing years, never had the opportunity to be able to give birth or to give a grandchild, to their parents. You know, people were, just devastated over that. So again, I'm glad, Sharon, that you came out, were able to come out on the other side of this and do all the phenomenal things that you're doing. I just have one question, if I can. So you have these multitudes of transitional housing. I know on the West Coast, Susan Burton has something similar. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her, but she's a formerly incarcerated woman herself and came out and was able to do similar things to what you're doing in Florida, in California. So I guess what I'm asking is there some type of communication amongst people who are doing things in other parts of the country? And if not, how can that happen so that you all are building on each other's strengths, not making mistakes and all like that?
So I am so, so glad that you asked that question. Let me tell you something. Let me just start with the state of Florida. I get calls all day, every day from state, local, and federal institutions requesting or asking for a bed. It's sad that I don't have but a few resources at my disposal to refer people out to when I'm maxed out or I'm full or I don't have a bed available. I go to the conferences just for this reason alone, is to connect with people who are getting resources in other states. How do I do this here in my state? In my state of Florida, it's not what you know, it's who you know. I hate to say that, but it is brutally honest.
It's universal. It's who you know.
It's brutally honest. And so I don't have a crab mentality. My staff gets on to me all the time. Ms. Driver, you're giving away the secret sauce, or you're telling how we do this thing. Yes, because I'm just one entity and I can't house everybody. And so I love to share the knowledge of how to do something, or, what can we do as a conglomerate group of people with the same heart and vision? Well, I learned early on that we might have the same vision, but we all don't have the same heart.
Mm.
Yes.
Thank you. This is WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. PFW is heard around the world. They want to thank you for tuning in. Sharon, I want to ask you a question. We have another young lady on the screen, Stephanie Diaz.
Yes.
She's with you and your staff. You want to come in, Stephanie? Are you available? Can you hear us? There she go.
Hello, hello.
Hello, how you doing? Identify yourself and your connection with this dynamic lady, Sharon Driver, please.
I most certainly will. First of all, I want to say thank you for even allowing me to come in, Mr. Roach Brown. Thank you. And you guys have Florida Sunshine on the screen with Sharon Driver.
We got a real orange.
That's the Florida Sunshine right there. This lady is so dynamic and so amazing. I started reentry here in Jacksonville, Florida, Duval. Okay. And I met Sharon over a year ago, and she has inspired me to no end. I started my transition home for men here in the city of Jacksonville, Florida. She has been a mentor, a sister, and just a good friend. We're helping citizens here in the city of Jacksonville through our organization, NARP, which is the National Association of Reentry Professionals. We'll be up in Nashville, Tennessee next week, starting the 13th through the 17th. We're having a huge conference up there, and we're going to change lives.
Okay, we would like to be a part of that. If you can send us information on what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is National Second Chance Month, and we're bringing folk to you who was taking advantage of that second chance. But more than that, you said something at the conference, Sharon, that you went into prison and you went to the law library and you filed your own paperwork, your motion, to the court. And a lot of times we have to do things that we never thought that we were capable of doing and won't do. But when your life is at stake,
That's right. It
makes you get off your can.
That's right. We
had a friend of ours named Willie Jolly, a motivational speaker, and he said, every setback is a setup for a comeback.
You
done came back, you are back, and you're going to stay back.
Right.
They want to keep you in. So when we meet folks like you, we try to share your stories. Hopefully, there's folk who are listening all over the world, some who are going through the same things, don't know what to do. One of the things that we notice that when you go to prison, the first thing most people do is go to the law library to find out how much time they got, what can be done or what cannot be done to get out of prison. And you did what a lot of us do. And you take it upon yourself. You read the law. You find a way to get your stuff. And if somebody don't help you, it don't make no difference.
No.
Keep on keeping on.
That's right.
We're going to open up the phones. If we got any phone callers who wish to comment or with a question for our two guests, Sharon Driver and Stephanie Diaz, you look like a movie star, Stephanie. Is that you? I thought we had a movie star up there, Sharon. I ain't even tell me you're bringing a star in here.
She is absolutely amazing. Yes. We're definitely going to be in Nashville, Tennessee this week coming at the NARPS conference. Rosetta Taylor is an amazing woman who started NARPS because she also, too, worked in the justice system, and she saw the need for change, and she started the NARPS organization, National Association for Reentry Professionals, and she gravitate state to state and grabbing people who have amazing stories like ourselves to share with other people in the reentry world. And so shout out to Rosetta Taylor for the amazing work that she does. But Stephanie Dates is on that board with her as well, and they're doing an awesome job.
You know, the phone number to call is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. If you have a question or comment for these two powerful sisters we have, this is National Second Chance Month. And believe me, she's taking advantage of it. And a lot of folks who call us, we got a guy, Sharon, who makes $15 a month in prison. And every few months, he sent us $25. Because
we
are a non-commercial station, so our listeners pay donations or whatever to contribute to keep us on air. But this gentleman sends us $25 every few months, and he only makes $15 a month to show his need or his desire to keep our show on the air and keep information coming to him. So the phone number to call is 202-588-0893. We'll take our first caller for Sharon and Stephanie. You on the air, please. You on the air. Question or comment?
Yeah, hi, Roach. I'm sorry. This is actually for you. This is Neffa. How you doing?
Hey, Neffa. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Real quick, I just wanted to appreciate the passion. And welcome to your guests, too, and their endurance and example. But I wanted to appreciate the passion and the urgency in which you presented before the guests about this criminalization of our youth. I don't want to derail your topics and where your show is going.
Come on with it, man. Do your thing, Neffa.
Well, it's really just an appreciation of you to talk about this, you know, how these policymakers are it's really, there's no alternatives to the punitive measures or nothing, and just criminalize our youth like they're some enemies or something. And so, no, you know, it really needs to be said. I'm glad you're the one that's saying it, because people are listening to your voice and your show and the vital topic issues that it brings. That's all. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Anytime you want to call in, Neffa, you can call in, because the warden told me Neffa got the green light. So whenever you call, Neffa, you got the green light. I just want to add a little something to that. This thing about what's going on in this city, Sharon. Last week, the Baltimore City Council passed a law targeting youth. D.C. Council did it 2 weeks ago. Why is it that our black and brown youth are being targeted and there's no resources or services? And they're talking about locking up kids. We have a 40% truancy rate in D.C. And I asked a couple of kids, why you don't go to school? And the kid told me, I'm afraid to come out the house. There's a bully on the corner. There's a gang. If he come across the street on this way, he had to join this gang or he's retaliated against on another gang. A lot of these kids don't have a house. You don't lock your way out of a problem. These are our kids. And for a black woman, the deputy mayor, to say that she ain't got no problems with locking up or being aggressively prosecuting our kids. Lady, I don't know who you are. I don't know where you're from, but you don't need to be in our city treating our kids this way. This is not the way to solve a problem. You can't lock up our kids when they don't have a home. They're sleeping in the streets. They're sleeping on the bridges. And they don't go to school. They're worried about a place to sleep or a place to eat. They don't have time to go to school. Deal with the problem. What's causing the problem? Don't keep punishing our kids. And for a black woman to say this, and we lock up more youth in Washington, D.C., and they can stay locked up for 30. At the conference we was at, Sharon, I met two guys who did 27 and 30 years. They went in as teenagers. Stop locking our youth up and bringing them out as senior citizens. Yes. Right. This is not right.
They need to start dealing with the root causes of criminal behavior, the root causes, and that is not what is being dealt with.
Let me speak on that, please, because I'm about to beam up out of this chair.
Come on out that chair, lady.
I hear what everybody is saying. I hear what everybody is saying. I'm going to say this. It wasn't the criminal system that failed me. It wasn't that at all. Let me tell you.
What failed you? What was it?
My community, education. Listen, I was molested as a child, a young girl. And let me tell you what I started doing. I started stealing at a very young age, you know, walking to school after my molester done molested me. And I would brush it off, wash myself up, and go off to school. And I started going into the little 7-Eleven store, stealing lemon drops to ease the pain or to soothe how I was feeling. And no one ever stopped me at the door to call the police for me to get the help that I needed at that point in time. Before you knew it, I had my first child by that molester. You understand? And So then from there, I never dealt with the trauma. Never dealt with the trauma. Mm-hmm. So when I say my community, I'm talking about my family. Nobody got me the help that I needed. I didn't get the help that I needed as a child. Nobody sat me down in front of a counselor to talk about how I was feeling or what I was going through. And then I continued to grow up through life. And so I started running from those problems, running dead into the wrong man's arms, running into the wrong stores. And then before you know it, I started making a track record for myself, you know, repeat offenses, in and out of jail, foster homes, things of that nature. I tell people all the time, I am so thankful and grateful to God, that my father, the Father is why I'm still here today, because I done had seizure after seizure. I done been running away, you know, you name it, in and out of somebody's jailhouse before ever making it to the big house. Just not targeting my childhood trauma. If we don't start asking the questions, what's wrong? Why are
you? There you go.
I'm telling you, the kids are not talking because nobody's asking the right questions. Stop the accusing and start asking. Hug somebody, hug a child. That goes a long way. I didn't have a hugger in my life. But if I'd have had the hug, if I'd have had the right hugs from somebody, right, who knows? But I'm just telling you, we have to. I learned to listen to my children.
Give it up, lady. Come on with it.
To listen to my children. I grew up as a child with my children. So therefore, I wanted to be a different mom than I had for myself. God knows I have an amazing mother. Let me correct you there. Say that first. But listen, nobody listened to me. As a child, nobody listened. I always say I was stereotyped as the black sheep of the family. Well, black I am, sheep I'm not. Because I don't know anybody that's perfect, and I definitely wasn't. But I could tell you one thing. knowing the word of God got me to where I'm at today.
Yeah, we have another caller on the line, Roach.
We'll take our next caller. You're on the air. Question or comment, please.
Yeah, good morning, Roach. Thank you again for another fascinating program here. I was at the NRCC conference. In fact, I was in your housing thing. This is Dexter Ford. Merry Christmas.
Hey, you turkey. I thought you sound familiar. Merry Christmas. Let you out your, how'd you get out your cell, Dexter?
Well, I tell you, I was listening to the sister, and she was talking about answers.
Speak up a little louder, a little louder.
I said, I was listening to the sister, and she was talking about answers to the youth, and I was saying, that's what's wrong. We feel like we have the answers to them when we get old, but then she hit on it. We need to listen to them. And that's one thing that's not going on. I guess I it's amazing what she was doing. The sister who sat next to her, who's over in Virginia, who had
Sonya Allen, yes,
right. She was, and it was just amazing. But I wanted to showcase something else about somebody else who does work in the trenches too. Was Kevin Petty? Kevin and I on Sunday went up to Pamoke City, Maryland, which is up on the Eastern Shore, and looked at an 85-unit motel that we wanted to buy. They were selling it for a bargain basement of $2 million. I wanted to offer them something. That's a real estate issue. And what we wanted to do was create for the truancy issues, which these kids should not be facing criminal prosecution. I never knew that. I came up young. I went in the system, as you know, when I was 17 and got 50 years. Okay. And what happened is I came out as a jailhouse lawyer. And then, but that's a side now. I want to give back, but I want to speak to that bifurcated issue as well, and why I'm really ecstatic about how Sharon and the other lady who came on is going to Tennessee.
Stephanie Dez.
Right. How they have come out and done something, because we too need to address that issue. Most of the guys come out now need to get a bankroll from me so they can do other stuff in the street and never do anything in terms of contributing back to this issue that we have now, the crisis that we have with these young kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to address them too. Like those sisters are coming out, and this shines what you can do when you come out, you know, and not come out and feel that you got a nickel and dime people. I know you got to get started. I know you got to do it, but just what the sister said, she made a way out of no way. So, yes. But what I wanted to talk about, we missed that whole motel because Motel 6 bought it when we got up there. It was a 3-hour drive. We drove up there. We've been trying to sneak it in. We want to get the funds. I was going back to the beginning of it and try to create an elementary college for these young kids so that they could be the leadership of each one, teach one, each one, try to reach one.
Yes.
I wanted these guys to speak to their youth. I wanted them to come on Roach's program and talk about what needs to be done at 16, 17 years old. I want to create some scientists and some stockbrokers and these youth to come up. But we got to expand. And the end of the program would be, everybody would have to sign on to be a first-time home buyer. There you go. So we could build economic wealth in those young guys. So if we got 50, we would turn out 30. So I just want to ask them, how do we approach more people who are coming out and get more people to join this movement? Because that's what it is, a movement to raise our youth to be leaders.
Yes.
I would love to tell you. I wrote my 501c3. Off of the legacy project of changed choices. You know what legacy means to me? Leaders empowering, guiding, and changing our youth.
Say that again, would you?
That's right. The legacy project of changed choices is the 501c3, the foundation of my 501c3. And legacy, L is for leaders empowering, guiding, and changing our youth. That is the legacy that I leave behind. What I do today for S&D, it is not for me. It is for my grandchildren. It is for them to have something to look forward to. It is something to motivate them to want to help the community that they live in.
That's right.
Well, it starts at home. Everything starts at home. You learn how to walk and talk, eat, sleep. Everything is done under the roof of your house. It starts at home. And I grew up where a village took care of the kids in the neighborhood. We don't do that anymore. We don't do that anymore. I could see somebody getting their tail whooped across the street. I go right on back in the house. That's not what Miss Lucy used to do. You understand? No. Miss Lucy used to come right on over. Fannie Mae, what did she do? You know? Yeah. It's not, we don't have that anymore. We don't have those old school moral values of raising our children anymore. Well, I'm here to tell you, discipline is the key. We got to start listening, but also holding our children accountable. You don't go to school to get an education. You don't go to school for a fashion statement or to be bosom buddies or join the team that's bullying everybody. No, you've got to get that education. But society has it set up to where the kids, they ain't interested in education anymore. They're not. They tell them, don't call 911 on your parents and things of that nature. They helping set our children up by locking up the parents.
You know, this is, like I say, it's amazing that in this city, they passed a law to punish folks because of the crime. And ironically, the crime rate is going down in Washington, D.C., but the publicity of one or two crimes make it seem worse than what it is. And it's creating a fear all across the country, not just in D.C., Florida, all over the country. Yes. And what we've been doing is trying to use, we've been using returning citizens. And at that conference, every other person I talked to had done 15, 20, 30 years.
Yes.
You know, and they're walking out with suits. I was amazed. They look like preachers. They look like an attorney.
Doctors,
yeah, lawyers. And you can't tell somebody. Go ahead.
This conference motivated me so much. I have literally been on fire since I got home. I went there and I was just amazed. Thank the lady that from the DOJ, how she got up there and was telling us how to get the funding. Nobody is advertising to nonprofit organizations how to help us expand or to make what we do better.
There you go.
Yes, me personally, and I'm going to put it out there, I don't have nobody dropping checks off or donating to SME Enterprises, and I'm a 501c3 charitable organization. But guess what? This was built on blood, sweat, and tears.
Yes.
You know, my foundation was built on blood, sweat, and tears, and the amazing people that God has dropped in my seat, in my life along the way, in the path of S&D being established, is truly, truly has been a blessing. My Neil LaVales, my Pastor Anthony Lewis, my Gina Del Pontes, my Mac Majors, my Tim Greens, my GSD family, you know, the Dottles of the world. You know, estate sale companies, people who allow me to come and pick up things after the sale is over with, just donating. But financially wise, people aren't telling you how to do those things. Everything has to be done based on if you got this, this, or that, that, and this. And it's crazy. But that's why I go to the conferences to learn, you know, this or how to do that, or hear somebody else's story to keep me motivated to keep striving. That conference that we just did, let me tell you something. I take my hat off to Carlisle Holder.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Yeah. Kemba Smith and, you know, the Kevin Pettys and Denise and Dr. Garrett and his wife. Yes. Just simply amazing people who are trying to do things for returning citizens. And this is what I'll be doing for the rest of my life.
Thank you. We got about 2-3 minutes left. Would you like to give some closing comments in terms of how folks can reach it, but also a word of wisdom to the folks who are listening? We got people listening in these cells all over the country, listening from their cell blocks.
I'm gonna address my sisters and brothers that are still behind the wall, the great university of the world, is to set yourself right underneath where God is, and that's his word. And if you do that and you have the faith, just the size of a mustard seed, I can about guarantee you, I stake my name and my life on it, that you will see the light.
There you go.
I kept my faith in the word. I never gave up on the fact that, you know, of course I didn't claim the 20 years because of my faith in God's word. But I tell those people behind the great wall, the university of life, do not give up on self. So many people
there you go. Prison
and they just accept the time and don't have no fight in themselves, no oomph to get up off that bunk and go to the library or go walk around the field and pray and talk to God. I challenge you, if you just give it a try, it'll make you feel different, think
there you go,
different, and do your time different. I did the time. I didn't allow the time to do me.
Beautiful. There you go.
There may be someone who wants to. Is there a way to get with you?
Oh, absolutely. You can always reach out to us via email, which is info@sanddenterprises.org. That's sanddenterprises.org.
And a phone number.
Yes. Reach me at 407-341-9431. That is the office number. Myself or Gina Del Ponte will always answer that phone. And you are more than welcome to sow your seeds into this organization.
Thank you. Thank
you. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you. This has been Crossroads, and our topic has been from incarceration to entrepreneurship. And we have a young lady here who could teach a course in this whole topic. So if you listen, please take heed to what was said. We bring you information that would feed your spirit, your soul. And I want to say thanks to Stephanie Diaz, to our co-host Nikichi Taifa, to Sharon Driver, to my beautiful wife, and to Carla Holder and the folks who handled or coordinated this National Conference on Returning Citizens. I've been to several, but this one is at the top of the list.
Yes, so it is.
Yeah. Please stay in touch, and we need to connect. Everybody who's at the conference, we got your name. We submitted the list. So we can communicate on a regular basis because we're all doing God's work. And yes, whatever we can do to make it better for somebody else, I thank God that we met you, Sharon Driver. Yes. Lady, when I met you, my hat just fell right off my head. You knocked my hat off my head. You know what I mean? So I just want you. Thank you for being you, and keep on keeping on. This has been Crossroads. My name is Roach Brown. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Talking to the hat.
Thank you.
Another day has come and in a world where I don't belong. Another week has passed me by. It's not because I didn't try. Nobody saw. Before they notice me, another job that I just can't get. A nice apartment the landlord just won't rent. I go to bed, but my sleep just won't.
Dori Ladner was a courageous civil rights activist. Her legacy lives on every time we choose to confront injustice. Dori Ladner's funeral will be held this Saturday, April 13th, at Shiloh Baptist Church, 1500 9th Street, Northwest, D.C., at 11 a.m. All are welcome to come and bid farewell to this icon of the civil rights movement. WPFW extends condolences to the family of Dori Ladner.
The search process for WPFW's next general manager is underway. Successful management searches begin by having conversations with stakeholders to clarify and document expectations for future management. Therefore, WPFW's local station board is inviting all stakeholders to participate in our online survey. To complete the survey, please click the link on WPFW's website. Because we need your input, the deadline for the survey has been extended to Friday, April 12th,